Hello, my friends. My goodness, can you believe how steadily we are moving to the end of the year? It's that time of year where we can feel pulled by the forces of family, season, and consumerism. I want you to remember to come back to you. Check in with yourself throughout the season with a pause, a breath, a word of self-compassion, a word of kindness. And there are a couple of special things I have planned to support you. First of all, for all my yoga teachers out there, I am leading a trauma-informed yoga teacher training this January 24th and 25th. It is so easy to traumatize or re-traumatize a practitioner in yoga spaces. In this training, you'll discover what it means to recognize and support trauma survivors in yoga studios and to bring yoga teaching off the mat. The info is on my website, laraland.us, under consulting, and of course, we'll have it in the show notes. And second, but certainly not least, I am doing very, very special episode on this podcast on December 22nd. I will be leading an alignment and manifestation workshop based on my life purpose journal and year-long coaching program, My Bliss Book. So purchase your copy of My Bliss Book in advance so you can do all the meditations and visualizations along with me, get past your blocks, out of your way, and start manifesting the life of your dreams in 2026. And that is also linked in the show notes and available on my website. I am so excited to bring this offering to you and to see what you cook up for the new year. I'm Lara Land, somatic coach and yoga teacher trainer, and this is the Beyond Trauma podcast. What a couple of years we have had. The challenges continue to grow, and more of us are experiencing some level of traumatic stress. My commitment here is to bring you the most up-to-date insights on exactly how trauma affects our mind-body-spirit system and how we can work with our bodies to soften its impacts. You will be hearing from trauma survivors and researchers, and together, we are going to incorporate what they have to teach us to heal ourselves and promote the well-being of all those around us. Here we go. Beyond Trauma listeners, did you know you can always start over? Giving myself permission to begin again at any moment has allowed me to constantly evolve, and it's a tool I use with all of my coaching clients. It's also the premise of my first book, My Bliss Book. My Bliss Book is an undated life purpose planner that comes with an automated coaching program sent directly to your inbox biweekly when you enroll using the secret URL found inside the book. You will receive my creative visualization meditation, encouraging you to move beyond social programming and self-imposed limitations and into visualizing your truest, most honest vision for your own unique life. Then using my Bliss Book, you will work backwards to develop actionable steps to meet goals throughout the year that take you towards your big vision. Have a habit of buying pretty planners and putting them down before they're finished? Not a problem. My bi-weekly emails provide just the nudge needed to pick up your planner again. And if you miss a few days, you don't waste your book. The book is undated, so you can always start again. My Bliss Book is available off my site, laraland.us, and is now 20% off for my podcast listeners with code STARTAGAIN. But hurry, this discount won't run forever. Hi, everyone. Welcome back. Oh my gosh, I just had the best conversation. You're going to love this. Today's episode is all about negative thought patterns, how thoughts, emotions, and behaviors interact, CBT, common thought ruts that we can get into, comparisons with others, all or nothing thinking, catastrophizing about future outcomes, and what we can do about it. There are so many takeaways. There are so many practices. You can pick one from this episode, and I think there's somewhere you can immediately start feeling better. So that's pretty exciting. Today, I have on the show Carly Ann. She's a therapist helping people who worry, overthink, and feel stuck in unhealthy relationship patterns that could be with partner, friend, family member, and that could be the relationship with yourself. If you find yourself feeling anxious, overreacting, fearing abandonment, feeling like you've tried everything, being very critical, she's the one you're going to want to talk to / work with. And she's going to share lots of ways you can work with her at the end of the show. She has London's Top Attachment Podcast and runs a worldwide attachment membership. And she has so much to offer for anxiety, for feeling out of control. You are in great hands today, my friends. Here we go. Yay! Carly Ann, I'm so glad to have you on.
I am so happy to be here. I really mean it.
Yeah. You know, what got me about your work is your amazing Instagram.
Thank you.
Because you really lay out the connection between like triggers and thoughts and beliefs and like how that works in many of us, probably all of us to a degree, to like how we see the world and how we're reacting and creating cycles. And I think that's something a lot of people struggle with and may not understand that that's all happening within us almost at every moment.
Yeah. I would say at every moment.
Yeah.
Even the good moments.
Even the good moments.
It's really lovely that you've looked at kind of my work and that's one of the things that you pull out, because perhaps it's not one of the things that I will get asked about like all the time, but it's one of the things I probably do the most in my work. Mm. And I think that I get a lot of pleasure from as well, like actually drawing these cycles out with people.
Yeah. So help us understand what you do see in people. A lot of anxiety, perfectionism. Like, what are some of the main things that people are struggling with?
With particular anxiety, you mean?
Yeah.
I think worrying, like really just catastrophizing, doubting themselves. And I see that there's so much anxiety. I feel like when we break it down, when we do break down these cycles, we seem to come to like this really similar themes, even if it is, yeah, I'm struggling with perfectionism. I'm struggling with worrying. I'm struggling with what other people think. I tend to find that on some level, we come to, I don't feel like I'm good enough. Mm. Or I'm worried that I'm not going to look good enough. And as soon as we have some kind of uncertainty around, am I able to perform to this level? Am I able to have whatever it is that I need to have to look and feel a certain way? As soon as there is some uncertainty about those things and we start to doubt our worth, we're so anxious. If something happens where we truly do doubt our worth, we feel really low. Mm. So I think if there's uncertainty, we'll start to feel really anxious. If there is certainty that I haven't got the thing that I want or need to feel good enough, then I think we feel really low. That's what I tend to see.
Yeah. And it seems like there's a lot of pressure to look like we've got it all together. And there's like a kind of trend to hide our flaws, our mistakes, and maybe that's playing into it as well.
Yeah. The strategies that we will each have, I think that there's themes, but there are strategies as an individual that we have to show up a certain way. Mm-hmm. And for one person, that is going to be that, yeah, I have to look a certain way. For the next person, it's that I have to perform and achieve a certain way. Another person, it's that my house has to look a certain way. You know, we have these different goalposts. Some people will have all of them, but we have different strategies in place to essentially try to meet these standards. To try to meet whatever it is that we've come to believe that we need to be in order to be accepted, in order to look good enough, and in order for our mind and nervous system to feel calm.
Mm. Yeah, sometimes like the home and trying to arrange our lives and the people in our lives, it's like trying to control for the anxiety, would you say?
Yeah. I would 100% say that we're driven by the anxiety. So when we start to feel that anxiety for whatever it is that's going on kind of beneath the surface, when that anxiety comes in, it's uncomfortable, understandably. And the drive becomes around not feeling that anxiety anymore. How do I not feel that anxiety? And like I said, it's kind of surface stuff. Okay, so I'm going to do the things. I'm going to do the strategies if they're within my control. You know, or if they're not within my control, I'm going to do as much as I can to try and get that control, to try and get that certainty. And obviously that can be disheartening when we just can't control everything. That's when we might really start worrying and playing over things and planning things and not being able to focus on anything else. We can control it. And then we learn, okay, now I know what I need to do to control this. And that's difficult to keep up, isn't it? To control everything, like to keep at that is tough. And sometimes that's how we burn out or whatever it is.
So when we're trying to control everything around us, it always includes other people because we live in a world with other people. And when they don't do what we hoped they would do or expected them to do or what fits into our vision of how the world should work, we can have a reaction to that.
We can have a reaction. And I see a lot with that kind of reaction, absolutely the anxiety. I also see a lot that's where like frustration can come in and anger can come in. Because as you said, the world is not as I believe it should be or expect it to be. And when that happens, that's when we can have that reaction. And it's okay to have that reaction. I think there's a natural element to that. For me, it's can we catch that reaction before maybe our behaviours go into those kind of strategies that where we're acting out of character, it can create a lot of conflict. And there's a lot of grey areas, isn't there? Because relationships as well are about trying to meet each other's needs, compromise. So there's real grey areas there. At what point do I ask my partner or my friend, you know, whoever it is, can I have support in this area? And when does that become actually that's enabling me to keep controlling? And it's really hard. And what comes to my mind as I'm saying that is perhaps a common phrase of, if you loved me, you would. If you loved me, you would do this. If they really loved me, they would do that. And there, it's just such a grey area for people. It's difficult to know when is this a really high expectation and when is this actually quite a fair standard.
Oh, are there any tools for actually assessing that for oneself?
The first thing that comes to my mind perhaps is learning what healthy relationships look like. I feel a lot of the time if there is that unknown around what is a healthy relationship, or if you have particularly low standards, really high expectations, it can be difficult to know that that's even happening. Perhaps if you haven't witnessed secure relationships or you haven't seen a compromise in relationships or conflict, that it is okay to have those differences and maybe not agree on everything. So that's the first thing that comes to my mind. And that might be just going online and being like, right, what does a healthy relationship look like? You know? And then what I really love to do with people is to consider, what are my expectations? Write them down. And then you will be surprised what your inner knowing already is, because when you see things written on paper, if you suddenly see my expectation is that my partner should be checking in with me 6 times a day, you might naturally know, I wonder if that's always going to be realistic. And so I would then, based on kind of the knowledge you've been gathering, is write a list of what might be a healthier expectation. What might a healthy expectation be in a relationship? We need the word sometimes it can be great. We, you know, people need to meet our needs but sometimes they're not going to be able to. You know, people need to be respectful. And I hope that this, of course, we always need to be respectful, if we just as a blanket term, but sometimes we're going to be a bit disrespectful, maybe if we're in a bit of conflict. But there is that room for sometimes. And that's how I tend to kind of look at it is, okay, sometimes my partner, sometimes he's late. You know?
That's really great. That's really great. I mean, even so, like, even in the way you're working with folks, it's not black and white. And we know, and maybe we can go over some of this, that like the distorted types of thinking that people have can be black and white thinking, which is kind of like a child, right? It's right or wrong. And we hope to develop a little more of like the subtlety of thinking as we age and mature. But of course, we can fall into that like black and white thinking, catastrophizing, that like future telling, you know, it's never going to work out, you know. So maybe we could talk about some of those traps that people fall into when they get triggered. And I love how you say it is a balance. It's not all or nothing. Sometimes we have to meet our own needs. Sometimes we have to look for other people aside from maybe that primary partner to meet our needs. And sometimes we have to ask for our needs to be met. Sometimes we have to say, like, is this a need or is this a want? Is it, you know, like, how big of a need is this on a 1 to 10? And I think your recommendation to write these things down is super helpful, because we often don't really know what we think until we get it down.
It's so powerful to see things written down. And I think with the distorted thinking as well, a lot of the time when you write them down, that's when you are really able to start to see themes. And you might always, well, not always, that's probably a thought right there, but you might see that, I don't know, every morning I'm having these types of thoughts. Or every time I'm stressed, I fall into this kind of pattern. And that can be so powerful. And something I will say as well about what you were saying about having other people meet our needs is sometimes a need will go unmet, and it's about riding that wave of an unmet need. But it's in those moments that we kind of need to find access to more flexible thinking. Because when we're under stress or there is a need unmet, they are times when we will fall into these distorted, unhelpful thinking patterns. And what we know is how we think hugely influences how we feel and what we do, and vice versa. And so if we are falling into these automatic negative patterns of thinking, we are going to be feeling a certain way. And then we're going to be having an urge to do those strategies that we were talking about earlier.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're really explaining that cognitive triangle, like the thoughts affect the emotions affect the behaviors. And it sounds like in your work, you're trying to help people get into that cycle where they can, where they notice. And it sounds specifically like you're really trying to affect those behaviors so they don't do something they regret later. Yeah, I see you smiling. Yeah.
Time. Yeah. What I loved about what you said then, and I feel can lack in a lot of settings, is you said we kind of get in where we can. I think that's so important, that some people can really access their thoughts. Some people can access their behaviors a lot easier, and other people can access that somatic, the emotions. And so, we, you know, as the practitioner, toolbox to know where to meet someone is so handy. But I love that, because that's what we mean when we say to meet the person where they are. To go in with breath work is great, but if that person hasn't got access to that kind of tool, and it's difficult. So I love that idea of meeting them where they are. What can they access? And a lot of the time, to do a lot as well with what people's goals are, many times people will say, I want to stop thinking this way. I want to stop comparing myself. I want to, and they know, they can see the kind of thoughts that they're having. They can see that criticism. And they know that it is having an impact on how they feel and what they're doing.
Yeah. Some people can catch that and
And I found with some people, particularly if they're more depressive types, it's just like getting them up and moving. I literally take it from the addictions like guide of like move a muscle, change your thought. It's just like get out of the seat, stand up.
If I'm working with someone whose primary problem is depression, 9 times out of 10, we will start with their behaviors. We will start with what they want to do, what they're not doing, what they're doing that is particularly unhelpful. Because it's really clear that when we feel low, tends to be a change in our motivation and then what we do. And usually that will lead to like a less rewarding life until we interrupt the cycle, which we can.
For those who are working on catching their negative thought patterns, I know I mentioned a few before. Are there others you want to point out, or the ones that I mentioned, do you want to say a little bit more about them? Like, how do you know if you're having catastrophic thinking? How do you know if you're having all or nothing thinking? Any that stick out to you?
What I will say, I'm just going to get up in front of me as well, is for your listeners to Google, go on good old Google, and actually look at unhelpful thinking habits. So they will all be explained there. Because I remember the first time, this was about 12 years ago, maybe 13 years ago. And the first time I ever delivered this was in a prison. I used to deliver CBT groups in prison settings. And I remember trying to explain these unhelpful thinking patterns. I had no concept of what this was, because clearly I was just living in my thoughts. I was not observing my own thoughts. So it was brand new to me. And I remember one of the guys on the group saying to me, how do you expect us to get it if you don't get it? But he was so right. I was trying to explain what these unhelpful thinking patterns were, and I had no concept of it. Because people listening to this kind of podcast probably are doing a bit of the inner work and have a bit of awareness. So this was like pre-awareness for me. But if you are just on autopilot at the moment and your thoughts are automatic and you're very merged with them, you may not even realize that actually we all as humans wake up in the morning, and if we're not aware, we're just falling into a lot of the time negative automatic patterns. And so once you realize, hold on, there are actually patterns, which is what we'll talk through now. So I'll tell you the ones that I find come up the most with what I'm working with in terms of mental health. So I've already mentioned comparing yourself, like comparing despair. So yeah, just comparing yourself to other people's happiness, their money, their relationships, whether they went on holiday. And of course, we've got social media, so that's a huge one. One that I work with an awful lot is shoulds and musts.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I should be doing this. I must be doing that. This questioning yourself and doubting yourself if you're not where you feel like you should be, or your performance today didn't go how you think it should do, or that you, I don't know, in some way not living up to what other people have told you that you should. Memories is an important one, that kind of ruminating, going over the past and going over and replaying certain events, certain relationships, that can happen an awful lot. You mentioned, one of the ones that I used to fall into a lot was mind reading. So assuming that you know what other people think.
Yes.
And it's so easy to say to people, like if you're in conflict, you think this or they think that.
Yes.
And we are just making these assumptions.
All the time.
And it all hurts the time. These unhelpful thinking patterns, they're hurtful. And of course, another really important one is catastrophizing, the worst case scenarios, imagining the worst, feeling like you won't be able to cope with the worst. We do that a lot. And that is something we'll do, particularly if we're in uncertain or ambiguous situations. And when there's other people involved, that's
yeah. So, you mentioned a couple really important things there. One, are many of these are automatic. So if you don't have a practice of Now, I got this just from yoga, observing thoughts. That was part of our practice, like an outsider observer mind. If you don't have a practice of kind of like stepping outside yourself in that way, and I think for some people, it's not good. They do that too much. So they need to come into themselves. So it's not recommended for everyone, but it can be beneficial to like step back and notice your thoughts just as a practice to notice. And as you mentioned, many of us have, we have an inner dialogue. We all have an inner dialogue and it's often negative. It must have some evolutionary purpose. I don't know if you want to speak to that, but it seems like it's there to protect us.
Yeah. Focusing on the negative is survival. And we're designed to survive. We're designed to protect ourselves. We're designed to look for the bad and what can go wrong. How do I need to protect myself? And as soon as that anxiety, you know, is sparked a bit, we're going to be focusing on that even more because, again, it's survival. So we truly have to train ourselves to not even just look at the positive, because I know that even that can frustrate people, that kind of looking at the positive, but to look at things in a more balanced way. Look at that things can go well, to consider self-love and good things about you and things that can work out in other people. We actually have to work at that a lot of the time. It's truly a choice. I talk a lot about the first 30 minutes when you wake up, because those first 30 minutes, you have to make some choices. You have to make some choices about how am I going to think in these 30 minutes? Because we have these automatic thoughts and we wake up thinking, oh, whatever it was we were thinking bad about yesterday, that will be going through our mind. We'll be judging ourselves. I can't handle today. I'm tired. There's no way I can do whatever it is that I've got coming up. And that's how we're starting our day. So I will observe my thoughts. I'll encourage people to observe those thoughts the first 30 minutes. Am I noticing any of those patterns? But most importantly, can I just bring in some calming, neutral mantras for that first 30 minutes? Not the shoulds and musts, not that I should be exercising, not that I must be doing the thing that makes me feel amazing, but can I just be good enough? Can this just be okay? Can I accept that in this moment, this is what it is?
Yeah, because we wake up, we already, many of us have a to-do list already going. We wake up because cortisol gets released. And so that's how we actually awaken. So that's kind of stress hormone is happening in the system. Then many of us drink coffee, which is going to increase our anxiety. And so I love what you're saying about kind of setting the tone for the day.
Setting the tone, because those patterns that we were just saying, they can easily come in and take over. And as soon as we can, like you were saying, become the observer, we give ourselves a much better chance of being able to interrupt those cycles. And, you know, they're automatic a lot of the time. So yes, they come in and that's going to happen if, you know, we get triggers all around us for certain things. That doesn't mean that I have to follow that thought. And the more aware we are of our styles of thinking and which ones we're more likely to think or fall into, and perhaps kind of what times, we can give ourselves a better shot at just becoming that observer and not feeding them. And then we feel a bit better. So it's not the, I must stop having these thoughts. It's, can I stop feeding them? Can I stop believing them? I see those patterns really as like a red flag, which is, so if I'm having a big reaction to something, first I'll be like, okay, well, am I falling into any of those patterns? And if I am, there is a big chance that my reaction is out of proportion to the situation. It is not to say the situation is good. It's not to say there's not boundaries to be set or that it's not upsetting, but it's possible that with this unhelpful thought on top of it, that I'm also hurting myself.
There's so much to say there. I think it's very important what you pointed out. I just like to highlight the important things you're saying. There's so many of them. So thank you. Is because a lot of people are under the mistaken notion, especially people that come from like my old world of yoga and meditation, that they need to stop the thoughts or the bad, quote unquote, bad thoughts. And that's not even actually what we do in meditation. We're much more of watching some acceptance, some compassion around it, not feeding it, not holding too tightly, not pushing away, but a being with, a sense of here's what's showing up right now.
100%. If I was to say to you not to think of a pink rabbit, like do not think of a pink rabbit, you're going to think of a pink rabbit. It's the same when we try to stop worrying about something, when we try to stop thinking about someone or something, the more we just try to stop, we wind up thinking about it more. So it's, I think once we can have that understanding, what people will say a lot of the time at this point is, yeah, but now what? Okay, now I'm aware of it. Now what? I would say as like a first step, not to underestimate the power of becoming that observer. Because even just being that observer and starting to go into that state of curiosity, that can put us 5% calmer. That might be the difference between us acting out. That might be the difference between us staying up all night worrying to being able to just feel a bit calmer and function.
I believe that it separates us from it. So we're not it and we're not totally wrapped up in it. And it reminded me of something you said earlier, which is we don't have to believe every thought that comes through our mind, which that in itself is huge.
So many of our thoughts are not true. They're not true. They come often from that place again, right, of self-protection. So I feel like there is a purpose to, from our inner critic, to the fact that we're worrying, to the fact that we're going over those memories. There usually is a purpose that, believe it or not, is trying to provide us A, with some kind of relief, B, trying to make it so that we in some way can feel good enough or at least look good enough. So there is purpose behind these ways of thinking. Your inner critic is a classic example for beating you up, to keep you small, to prevent you from taking risks and potentially not looking good enough, failing, being laughed at, being rejected. So I'm going to beat you so that you don't take any risks.
Play it safe.
Yeah, ruminating over the past, looking at the cycles, often you'll find that this can really vary for the relief it will give in that moment. But a common theme that comes up is people are ruminating when there is a task that needs to be done. So things have a purpose. Our thoughts have a purpose. There's self-protection there. Doesn't mean that we want to keep it that way. You mentioned self-compassion. I feel like when we can start to understand, I'm human, and it makes sense that I think like this and have these reactions, I feel like that's a huge part of the change and the healing.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And then you were mentioning that, like, if you get too positive with people, they tend to reject that. So it's more about like a realism.
Some people love it. I do like positive thinking. So affirmations, positive thinking, motivational talks, they really work for me. They really give me a boost when I need an energy boost, or if I need to remember who I am, or, you know, I need to feel bold again. They can really work and give me that energy. And I also understand that we can experience what is called a head-heart lag, which is when we hear these things and we perhaps know that we understand it, but if we don't feel it, that can feel rubbish. Or if we're so far away from the affirmations, can make us feel bad. So I also fully understand that. But I also can't feel bad. This is where I'm really trying to figure this out, because I can't apologize for the fact that those tools work for me.
Yeah, yeah.
But I also have to understand that they don't work for everyone. It's such a broad range. So when we're looking at the more balanced thinking, perhaps that's the compassion. And compassion, I would say compassion is needed if I'm feeling really low, if my mood is like plummeted, then maybe it's more compassion. So it depends on the situations, but people will know already, do you like affirmations or not? That's going to be a bigger sign of where to start with your balanced thinking and your positive thinking. But if positive thinking worked, we would all just do it.
Right.
We would just do it.
Right. I mean, it can bring some rejections, like that's not true. Or it can, like you said, it can really highlight the gap of where we are versus where we're saying. I find, again, with folks who are dealing with depression, it's like, it's too big of a leap. And I use more of like outside perspective of like, how would another person look at this situation? Which can be really helpful. Would everyone see it this way? Is there a time that you didn't see it this way? So just trying to build those different perspectives.
Exactly. And you see that a lot. If someone was to say to me, I just don't feel I'm good enough. A good question to ask yourself is, how much do I believe that? If you believe 100% that you do not feel that you are good enough, an affirmation is not about to change that. If you believe, you know, I believe it, like there's quite a big part of me that knows that I am good enough, but sometimes I don't feel good enough, affirmations could be really powerful for you. You know, so I think you can ask yourself, how much do I believe that? Because if you're stuck on a negative belief about yourself, or you think I'm never going to meet anyone, my life is never going to change, ask yourself how much you believe that. The higher it is, the more stuck you likely feel.
I love that. Scaling.
Yeah. And it doesn't mean the higher it is, it doesn't mean that we can never change that. We might not start with that. Mm-hmm. You know, if someone comes to me and says, oh, I don't know, I just want to believe X, Y, and Z, or I want to change this. And I say, well, how much do you believe that now? 100%, I'm never going to meet anyone. I am not about to sit there and try and convince you otherwise, because we're going to end up having a back and forth for an hour.
Exactly. It's just going to bring out the argument in you, like, yeah. No, I'm not. So that gives you a sense of like, okay, where to start.
Yeah.
Yeah. And again, how to meet the person where they're at.
That's it. That's a common theme, isn't it?
Yeah. That's beautiful. And I felt a few times in the conversation that you wanted to bring us the link from the negative thought patterns into what we feel. I'm not sure if we totally made that connection yet. So I'd love to bring us back to that thought.
In terms of just how we think and the link with our feelings.
Yeah. So maybe you can talk us through. So like I'm thinking, I'm having these automatic negative thought patterns. How does that affect a person's emotions and then their behaviors?
I will say this, there are different theories on what comes first and what influences what. You know, that there is one school of thought that your thoughts will come first after a situation, and then you'll feel a certain way and then you'll do something. And then there's other school of thoughts that say the emotion comes first, or the somatic. I've always, if you get too down that rabbit hole, it gets confusing. And then you kind of start doubting the tools and, well, what do I do then? So I always come back to, well, they're all interlinked. Maybe it doesn't matter which one comes first, as long as we go back to that earlier point of, well, which one can I access first?
Because I will say, like, if I wake up and there's just a general, in some Buddhist and mindfulness practices, they talk about feeling tone. So you can have a bad feeling and then you can create cognitively a story about why you have a bad feeling.
Exactly.
So you can create it both all the ways.
You can. I feel like when you're doing the work, that's where things get a bit confusing and overwhelming. You might close a book because you're like, that says different to what that one said. So what am I supposed to do? So I try to take that approach of, to be honest with you, I don't 100% know. However, meeting the person where they are, and what we do know is there tends to be a triggering event. We then have a reaction. That reaction can be broken down into the thoughts that we're having, the feelings we're experiencing, what we do, or the urge that we have to do or not do. I feel like the urge is really important as well. And what happens to us physically in our body. And we know that those areas are all interlinked. So essentially, if I change one of those areas, if I change what I do, that will change what I think and feel as well. If I change what I think, that will change what I feel and do as well. So it is very much about, maybe we'll start with the behaviors because that's a quicker win. It's an easier change to make sometimes. Maybe we'll start with the thoughts because there are some really deep thoughts getting in the way of you taking certain actions, but they're linked. You know, so look at where do you have the capacity to start? Is it in changing your behavior? Is it in adding a more compassionate thought? Just one shift is going to change the other areas anyway.
Yeah. I mean, it's really true. Sometimes if I don't have a lot of time with someone, I'm just like, I'm prescribing you 30 minutes outside, like with movement, because I know that's going to have like bang for the buck. You know, we don't have time to do all the stuff right now, but what you can do in the next week is just get outside.
That's such a good example that the times that we don't just get outside and then we do. For me, I've had it where, so I live in a block. Once I get down the steps and out the door, I feel like I'm really tuned into it now. I've had it where I am 30 seconds out the door and I have that feeling of, oh gosh, this feels good. And I've had it 5 minutes as well. I've had it 10 minutes, but I know that I've had it pretty much as soon as I've got outside. Like, what a beautiful day.
Yes.
And it can happen so quickly and it's so worth it because, I mean, there's so many things that can then influence your thoughts. You might, I don't know, bump into someone with the cutest new puppy and then you feel good and you didn't expect that. It's endless how it can improve your thoughts. I will say, just in case, it's also possible you'll go on a walk and can still ruminate. So
yes.
With you and I've been there as well.
There's no one thing fits all. And that's why we're giving a lot of different options. I'd love for you to take us through though, like once we're able to identify, okay, this negative thinking, I'm feeling quite bad. And then can you take us into the urge, the behaviors that people take to try to satisfy that and how you work with folks to maybe do something else instead?
Yeah. And it's always difficult with this because it's usually depending on what the main difficulty is. Is it around a certain anxiety, like socially, or worrying about something at work or what people think? Is it based on, like we've just said, low mood and motivation? So I do feel like keep a diary of that, what we've just described there. Keep a diary for like a week or two. What are the thoughts, feelings, behaviors, and urges? And kind of see what that link is. So as soon as you can see, I'm having the urge to do this, or I keep doing that. It's so useful. And you'll see really, you only have to ask the question of what am I doing that's not helpful, you know?
Oh yeah, I love that.
But of course,
I love that question.
Sometimes a lot of what you're doing, it creates, I can't fully remember your question. Was it just kind of how we'll look at it, isn't it?
Yeah, I think the behavior will create oh, if I could just like end your sentence for you, if yeah. I'm right, like an immediate relief, yeah. but long-term. Yeah. 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 It scratches the itch. Yeah. Maybe you could take us through, like, I don't know, and I'm just throwing this out at you, so say no if it doesn't sit with you. You could pick another one. But I feel like comparison you brought up, and that's something a lot of people deal with, and we've never talked about it on the show. Like, if you notice that you're always, like, comparing yourself to others, it's making you feel poorly about yourself, you're in a bad mood.
What's the urge?
What's the urge is like bringing people down or retreating, not going out, or maybe it's boasting about yourself somehow. There could be a lot of different, that's what you're saying.
Yeah, definitely all of those things that you've just said. There's usually, what we have to remember is if you're comparing yourself, it's likely that in some way you now don't feel good enough. I don't. And so that means that we feel bad. And so remember, when we feel bad, we want to do something, or we get the urge to do something to feel good enough again, even if it's not in the most authentic way. And so that is where, well, I'm going to book a holiday as well, then, that I've just seen them having, you know, or like you said, maybe I'll post a picture of the holiday that I went on, or someone's, I see a couple, and then it might be that I'm going to worry and ruminate, and that's how I'm going to cope with it. It might be an urge to, I'm going to reach out to my ex. I'm going to get on a dating app. I'm going to get close to someone myself. The feeling low or the retreating, especially if those things aren't accessible, if I can't book that holiday right now, or I can't do the thing, then yeah, I might retreat into myself. But usually we will want to feel good enough again. And the one that I find so interesting, and it's so subtle, and we fully believe it, and it's an unhelpful thinking pattern, is that we will go into judgment.
Mm-hmm.
They've only got that holiday because their parents pay for it.
Yeah.
Might be true, but isn't it interesting that we have to find a way to just lower them a bit? You know, they wouldn't have that if it wasn't for X, Y, and Z, or they're so lucky. We have to give a reason so that we can feel okay again. It's not us being horrible. It's a natural reaction that we're trying to get a feeling of being okay again. And I find this really interesting. I only read about this recently. One of the things that we'll do, the reason we keep doing it, is because sometimes we get a win. So it's a bit like gambling, which is that sometimes, I think I'm getting this right, we will compare ourselves and we will come out on top. And that feels really good. And so then we continue to compare ourselves, because even though sometimes it feels bad, although we've got a way that I can feel okay again because I'll put them down in some way or bring myself back up, sometimes we will get that win. And so if I bring them down, I feel a bit better again. Rather than, so if you're thinking about working with people, what if we didn't bring them down? What if I didn't post the thing or follow the urge? And actually, I allowed myself to be with this experience of, I feel inferior in this moment. This is what it feels like to feel not good enough. It's not true, because you are good enough. You're inherently good enough. But can I just notice, if I take all of the stuff away, I don't feel good enough? Can I just tolerate that for a moment? Because the world is not about to fall apart. It's not going to fall apart. And then we can start to tune into, actually, I'm a good person. This is what I have got, if we really need to go there. But I do feel like we've got to be able to tolerate the feeling that's under the urges.
Yeah, so you're saying feeling the feeling.
Feeling the feeling. I try not to say it sometimes, because I feel like it's, I remember never knowing what that meant, to feel the feeling, but that's exactly what I'm saying. Feel the feeling. As soon as we can tolerate that a bit, we won't feel the need to compare ourselves so much. It will naturally decrease.
And do you give people tools to build capacity to, I mean, because if there are some feelings of not being good enough or worthy, And especially if they're deep-seated, and I know you do a lot of that deep-seated work as well with childhood wounds.
Yeah.
That can be an intense feeling to sit with.
Really intense. There's lots of different techniques we can look at. I really love I've never explained this on a podcast, so I don't know how it's going to come out. But let's say you have a belief about yourself that I'm a failure. You would do the continuum. I don't know if you know this one. And at one end, it would be, okay, a failure. And then the other end, you get to choose the word that's the opposite. But let's say successful in your eyes. And you would list, firstly, you need to like rate yourself. So if you think you're a failure, well, how much of a failure? Like 80% or 90%, sometimes 100. And then you would really get the person to truly look at what is a failure in your eyes, like, truly what is a failure. And they describe things so extreme that is so far from how they're living their lives. And usually I know them quite well by now, so I can be really pointing that out. Oh, that's interesting, because you told me this about yourself. And they're like the opposites. I do this a lot as well with people, if there's people that think they're a bad mother. It's a very good exercise, because again, get someone to write down, or a bad person. Well, what's a bad person? And then you look at the opposite as well. And usually that's actually, even successful, that's usually more extreme as well. And they're able to go, yeah, you'd burn out. Oh gosh, okay. Well, that would be really hard. And so it's just a way of really then looking at, okay, so realistically, where actually are you on here? And it's like, oh, actually, I'm more like down 30%. I'm not that failure. So to first start to actually get an idea of what it is that you're calling yourself, what does that actually look like? And then another really key part, because the cognitive isn't enough, is to, and what I mean by that is just to start thinking well of yourself is usually not enough, is you then not need to start keeping the evidence that you are a good person. What is the evidence that you are not a failure? What, you know, and rewrite, for anyone listening, just whilst it's on my mind, rewrite the definition of failure anyway, because that's always a big mistake.
I'm so glad you shared this tool with us. I don't know this one, and it'll be a first for you.
I don't know if I've explained it well, because it's, I've never written it or said it on a podcast.
I'm you sure explain it so well, and if people want to do it, they can work with you. We'll let them know how in a minute, but no, you explained it really well, and it it struck me that that could be very helpful.
It's very quick that you see I'm being really harsh on myself. But do you know what is so interesting is that that's the underlying belief of like what a failure is or a bad person, and you're just openly and easily calling yourself that every single day. And then wondering why you don't feel good.
Yeah.
You know, because remember, we want to feel good enough. So if all day, every day, we're telling ourselves we're a failure, I'm working hard not to be a failure, and the only way I'm not a failure is if I do all of these things, it's this endless loop.
Yep. Yep. And that's where it goes back to what you said, like, is this helping? Is calling myself a failure helping? Some people feel that they need that critic, that parent, that disciplinarian, in order to motivate to do things. Like, they're afraid, if you take this away from me, how will I accomplish anything?
And I say to that, how can we find out? How can we find out if I stop being critical to myself, would I still succeed? Well, there's only one way to find out, really, and that's to practice being compassionate and see if you're still able to succeed. Because in my understanding so far, the evidence doesn't suggest that compassion equals people not still working hard and not still trying. But so yeah, that is one of the biggest things about the criticism, is that it can be motivating. But again, that's just the strategy that you've been using. There's other strategies, and the only way to find out if those other ones work is to practice, experiment. And the good thing is about the compassionate one compared to the criticism is that the compassion is linked with less depression, anxiety, stress, and relationship issues. and the criticism is very clearly linked with those things. So I know which one I'd want to whip.
I always say it's a bit mean, but like, you've been trying it this way and you came to me because you want something different. So exactly what you said, you know what this way gets you. Let's try something different.
Yeah, I don't know it. I'm just going to say it anyway, but there's a Louise Hayes quote that is just, it's something like that. You've been criticizing yourself your whole life or something. I don't know. There's a Louise Hayes quote that sums this up.
Okay, we're going to find it. We'll put it in the show notes.
Okay, perfect.
She has so many good quotes. So
yeah, there's probably someone listening to this, like shouting it down.
I love that. Tell us what it is. And also how fun if folks just read through a whole bunch of Louise Hayes.
I used to do that. I used to, because the reason I always go back to the morning is because that used to be one of the times where that cycle would get the better of me. And I used to write down quotes in the morning. That was one of the things I did.
Yeah, I love the morning as a really like important time for, like you said, setting the tone and, you know, just making an intention for how you want to be that day. I think it's a really, I mean, once the day gets started, we know, you know, we can get swept away. So even a few moments at the beginning of the day, I also like the eat that frog mentality.
Yes, I forgot about that. Yes.
Doing like the hardest thing first, because I think that can, aside from you won't be thinking about it all day that you need to do it, it can give you that boost of success or adrenaline, like you accomplish something right out the door and that can kind of fuel the rest of your day. So if you can give yourself an early in the day win, mm-hmm. you know, that's pretty great for, you can ride on that for a few hours at least.
Yeah, I completely forgot about that. I used to talk about that a lot.
Yeah, we have a lot in common, Carly, and I'm really glad that you came on. Is there anything that I didn't ask you today that's important to point out before we close?
I don't think so. Just really thank you, because one of the things that I'm personally working through at the moment is like, what do I love to talk about? Like, I know that I love having these conversations. I know that I love podcast conversations like this. What do I love to talk about? And I feel like this today is clearing that up for me a bit, because I've really enjoyed this.
Oh, that's so nice. As I know, you know, your work is a lot in attachment theory. We didn't focus so much on that. So I appreciate that you let me ask you questions about a little bit, like not directly onto attachment. Of course, it's interwoven there.
Yeah, no, that's what I need. That's exactly that I needed. So thank you.
Ah, it's wonderful when folks come together and these things work out. So I really, really appreciate your knowledge. Tell people how they can find you, how they can work with you.
Yeah, so the best way to find me, in terms of if you really just want to hear about the work that I do or the tools, techniques, is maybe my podcast, Lessons in Attachment. If you want, yeah, just to get to know me a bit more, the tips and the tricks, Instagram, which is carly.ann_, and about working with me one-to-one, or I have some group programs that are sort of released at different times of the year, would be my website, which is carlyann.co.uk.
Awesome. And we'll put that all in the show notes. As I mentioned earlier, I love your Instagram. I think, you know, I hope folks go and follow you right away and they'll get lots of little tricks and tips. You're doing a great job there. And thank you for all of your really, really good information, your takeaways, and just your wonderful energy today. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
As we buzz around the busy world, it becomes clear there are billions of paths. As we buzz around the busy world, we will appear in other people's photographs. As we speed through the centuries, we will collide and the light will bend. We will be accidentally immortalized in someone else's land.